Hello everyone, and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show on Myeloma. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor at the Cure Talk Cure Panel, joining you from India. And I welcome all of you this evening to a discussion on multiple myeloma. This is a special broadcast where our panelists were just back from New Orleans, where they were attending the American Society of Hematology conferences, would be reviewing the ASH13 experience as well as sharing with us myeloma news that they found interesting. I would like to emphasize that all the views presented here are from a patient's perspective, and all panelists are patient experts and not doctors or researchers. The co-host for our show today is Gary Peterson. Gary is the editor of MyelomaSurvival.com and a 7-year survivor of multiple myeloma. He works with myeloma specialists to provide life expectancy and survival rate data through his site. On the panel, we have Pat Killingsworth. Pat is a myeloma survivor and advocate. Pat has authored 4 myeloma books. Pat's books include Living with Multiple Myeloma, Stem Cell Transplant, A Patient's Perspective, New Multiple Myeloma Therapies, and Financial Aid for Myeloma Patients and Caregivers. Pat also maintains 2 blogs, Living with Multiple Myeloma. Living with Multiple Myeloma and Help with Cancer. Jack Aiello is an 18-year myeloma survivor. Jack's myeloma advocacy has seen him in many rewarding volunteer opportunities, including those with LLS, IMF, MMRF, and others. Next in the panel, we have Cynthia Shmilevsky. Cynthia was diagnosed with stage 3 multiple myeloma in 2008 and began treatment with novel therapies immediately. Cynthia is an active member of the Philadelphia Multiple Myeloma Networking Group, a trained mentor, and participates in several online communities. She's also very active on Twitter. A big welcome to all of you to today's show. Before I hand over to Gary to begin with the discussion, I would just like to remind everyone that on Monday, 16th of December, Cure Panel is featuring Dr. Fritz Van Rie of UAMS at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a discussion on total therapy in myeloma. You can register for the event by visiting curepanel.carefeed.net, or you can mail me priya@trialix.com and I shall add you. We can now begin with the discussion. I will now hand over to Gary. Gary, you're live.
Thank you, Priya. Thank you very much. And I want to thank Pat, Jack, and Cynthia for their efforts to go to the program and be a key part to it and bring back all their information. And I have some questions of them, but because they have spent the time there and taken a lot of notes and also blogged online as well, all 3 of them have blogged either for their own website, like Pat did, or Jack and Cynthia for their own, for the IMF website. And I read some of theirs, and they've done some extensive research and work. So what I'd like to do at this point is go through the 3 of you one at a time, and then at the very end I'll ask my question. So if that sounds okay, Pat, could you start it off?
Gary, Pat. I think you can start off with Jack. Pat has not joined us yet.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's go to Jack. Jack, would you please start off?
Sure. I don't know if people know what ASH is all about, but it's a meeting of 20,000 or so clinicians and researchers that are getting information in real time about clinical trial results and biological studies that are done on blood cancers, including myeloma. We obviously focus on the myeloma results, but to give you an idea, there were something like 835 oral presentations and papers or posters, they're called, specifically on myeloma. So there's no way one person gets to see them all because they all overlap. But at the same time, and I've been going to ASH now, this was my 8th year, I am awfully encouraged by the continued progress that I see in all phases of myeloma, starting with MGUS and smoldering, working its way through treatment and maintenance. There are new drugs in place. There are regimen protocols of current drugs that are being examined, and I think it's an exciting time and continues to be an exciting time for myeloma patients.
One thing I was noticing was at the very beginning there was a pro and con portion of the whole thing, and it was just so interesting to see how much disagreement and, I guess, agreement as well between clinicians. That was one of the things you both blogged about, you and Cindy.
So the first day before the official start of ASH on a Saturday is what's called Symposium Friday. And on that day, many of the nonprofits, including the International Myeloma Foundation that we were there with, have symposiums, and these are 3-hour sessions. And this particular symposium was really well and very interestingly structured, where Dr. Brian Dury had a faculty of wonderful and renowned myeloma specialists that tried to look at a case study and answer certain questions. And those questions might be, should this particular smoldering myeloma patient start treatment? Or should this particular case study begin, start off with a transplant? Or what about maintenance for this particular patient? And the fact is, there are no perfect answers for any type of myeloma patient. So it's very easy for these doctors, I think, to take both the yes and no and the pro and con sides of the argument and make it very clear to patients and doctors that are there to listen to find out how should they be treating their patients. I thought what was fascinating is the IMF does something really nice. They use a real-time system, a digital input system, where each person has this little handheld device. Before the argument, they'll type their answer into this handheld device, and you get an immediate response of how the audience feels about a particular yes or no answer. The doctors then present their sides of the story, if you will, and then the poll is taken again. Sometimes it's nearly the same. Sometimes it does a complete opposite. So, like I say, it's not uncommon to be with a group of 3 or 4 myeloma expert oncologists and get 3 or 4 different sides to the story.
Okay. Cindy, before... maybe we can just ask you about some of your takeaways from the meeting.
Okay.
And we'll get back to you again, Jack, just in a second.
Okay, well, once again, this is my second ASH. I felt a little bit less overwhelmed than I did last year because everything was completely new. But some of my takeaways is, the first thing, there was a quote that I was listening to an overview with Dr. Anderson from the Dana-Farber Cancer Center, and he said that myeloma patients and their caregivers can take great comfort in knowing that the advances of myeloma are still continuing. And that's what I felt when I was at the conference. There were so many new things that I heard this year that I didn't hear much about last year. They continued to talk about the monoclonal antibodies this year, which were just maybe even brought up last year. Some more talk about minimal residual disease and how this worked in other cancers like lymphoma, but how excited they are now that they're really thinking that they're getting to an instrument that could measure the minimal residual disease in the myeloma like they could in the lymphomas. And once they get this test or instrument to do that, how that could affect practices in ways that they're testing, in whether or not maintenance will be, in smoldering myeloma. Once again, I'm not a medical scientist here, so some of the statistics and overall survival I don't have in my mind, but my general feeling is there's a lot of progress to be made, and it's not only in new drugs and compounds that are being developed or new classes of drugs, but I feel that there's also progress being made in understanding the biology of myeloma. Thinking that the scientists and researchers are now understanding more about the different clones, because I keep on hearing that myeloma is a heterogeneous disease, and that there are not only myeloma, different clones of myeloma among different people, but within the same person, different clones evolve. And I'm thinking the scientists are understanding more about that clonal evolution and they're starting to see what drugs affect that clonal evolution. So that biology of the disease is really being more understood. And I think once the biology is being understood, more targeted agents can be developed for specific people in mind. And I believe that they're looking more at testing to get a better test result as to how you're responding. So I left very hopeful because the specialists, the top specialists in the country are saying how remarkable and all the new things that are happening in this field. And many of them now are mentioning the word cure. They're saying that they feel confident that most myeloma patients will be able to be treating their disease as a chronic condition in the near future, and some patients will have a cure for their disease.
I saw on Pat's blog the same thing that someone had mentioned. I guess there was a lot of talk about many doctors professing to cure now, where that's something in ashes past. It just never happened. So that sounds very good, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds exciting. It's not just one or two doctors. I was in many of the symposiums and satellite sessions and meetings that occurred after ASH. When I heard those myeloma specialists speaking, they were all talking about they're very hopeful for a cure in the near future for a subgroup of patients. They're going to work with the subgroup first, and I guess from what they learn with that group, move on to bigger subgroups of patients.
Okay. Jack, your takeaways?
I think they're similar. I found very interesting that they were looking carefully at those patients. There were a couple of talks that described how to use studies and classify, especially the older patients, as fit, unfit, and frail, and look at how treatment would affect their quality of life. Suggestions were made that the fit patient could do any of today's standard treatments, for example. These were typically older patients, so they may not be eligible for transplant. But other than that, do any of the standard treatments. An unfit patient, perhaps they would look at those treatments and dose reduce them. A frail patient, they might want to avoid things like melphalan, which are really hard on your bone marrow and such. But the important thing is they're looking at quality of life and correlating treatment responses for that type of patient. Another thing I found really interesting was the whole area of smoldering myeloma. And it's come up now where there are trials in place to look at high-risk smoldering myeloma patients. It may well be that if you have a relatively high M spike and plasma percentage that puts you still into a smoldering stage because you don't have any organ or crab damage, it's called, where today's typical treatment protocol is to watch and wait, it may well be that those set of high-risk smoldering myeloma patients should be treated to delay the onset of full-blown myeloma and thus delay the onset of organ damage. It could be that down the road, the actual definition of myeloma changes to include these high-risk smoldering myeloma patients. But right now, it's trials that are trying to answer the question of whether or not by treating these patients now, would it delay the onset of smoldering and result in longer survival. I thought, and it still is, maintenance is still a very hot topic. Most agree that maintenance improves the improves progression-free survival. In other words, taking maintenance will keep that myeloma from returning longer than if you aren't taking any kind of maintenance. But there's still a real big question in whether or not it extends overall survival, which should be our ultimate goal. There were arguments on both sides, and very valid arguments, that ultimately, I think the conclusion was that more study needs to be done on maintenance. So those are a few takeaways of mine, and I've got six pages of others, but I'll turn it back to you, Gary.
Okay. Priya, did Pat get back on the line?
No, Pat is not actually.
Okay.
I've been mailing him and trying to contact him.
Okay. Priya, yeah. You had a few comments about ASH.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
did you want to go over those right now, or would you want to wait for a little later?
No. Actually, I was following ASH through Twitter mostly, and I see that Cindy has talked that the tweeting thing for ASH 13, and I've been following Pat's blogs. And what I realized is Twitter had a lot of buzz. Dr. Rajkumar was tweeting about maintenance quite a bit. I think a couple of other IMS support group leaders were tweeting about 8 new drugs. They had actually mentioned it on Twitter, all the 8 of them. I think it was anti-CD38, MLN9, 708, RE520, ACY1215, and Selinexor, which again, I think Pat also tweeted, if I'm not wrong, and then our immunotherapies. And there was quite a buzz about, I think, quite a few people talking about how curing low-risk disease in the coming few years. So that was very hopeful, because if we are actually talking about a cure for myeloma, I think there's nothing better news. And, of course, the Black Swan initiative was much talked about. I think it was in day one or day two, I'm not sure, when it was announced, the collaboration with Onyx funding Black Swan. And it was quite interesting. I've been following. I'm actually watching the videos now, thanks to IMS and Cindy, who she posts all the IMS links, so I could easily access them. Thank you. It was really great. I just watched a very good video yesterday about what Jack was saying. The first day, I think, where they were talking, there was a panel discussion with Dr. Dhuri being the moderator and Dr. Rajkumar, Polambo, everybody on the panel, and they were discussing cases. It was very informative. I have actually tweeted about it. I think that's a very good link to actually get an idea of what happens and what's the latest in myeloma treatment as of now. I think, Gary, that's my take. So far.
Okay, well, very, very good.
Can I add to what you just said, Priya? In addition to the availability of those videos, there are more videos being put on the IMF website. I know both the IMF and MMRF have already scheduled webinars. The MMRF, in fact, is next.
I've tweeted the links to all the videos. If there's this one common page they have now for the IMS, and you could see the overview videos, you could see videos from individual specialists talking about individual drugs. It also has links to blogs the one link I tweeted is probably the one-stop shopping link of IMF's take on the ASH conference.
IMF, yeah. I checked that out too. It's really very a lot of information. But again, as one of the participants had written in, I think there was too much of information and you need to actually sort through them and get out news that we can use as one of them had mailed me. So that's what we hope, panelists like you can do for us. Layman terms, how does ASH affect the normal, myeloma patient? Because I don't think everybody can actually understand what's happening, and it needs to be explained in terms which is very simple.
Well, the other thing I wanted to bring up, because when I was watching the overviews from many of the myeloma specialists, they really seem to be excited about a study that came through with the elderly, non-transplant-eligible myeloma patient. And I guess the standard of care prior to the study for that patient was melphalan, prednisone, and thalidomide. And the study was about comparing that combination of melphalan, prednisone, and thalidomide to lenalidomide and dexamethasone given for 18 months, or lenalidomide and dexamethasone given continuously until a relapse. And what they found in the study, that lenalidomide and dexamethasone given till progression was very superior over the other two types of regimens, and they said that there was less toxicity, I can't even say that word, with the Len-Dex combination. That's the word, right? And a lot less people came off treatment, but they said the overall survival with the continuous, not the progression, was even better. So they were really excited about that. I think even in the conference in the session that I was in, they called it the new standard of care for the elderly myeloma non-transplant eligible patient. And they also said that this was kind of one of the first studies that they really looked at, comparing giving a course of lenalidomide and dex for 18 months or giving lenalidomide and dex until progression. And that more needs to be done, but these preliminary results are like suggesting that maybe it should be a continuous ongoing treatment. Jack, what was your take on that?
Well, I can do what some of the doctors did and take just the opposite point of view, because you're right, the Revlimid Dex was a superior arm, but one of the doctors talked about the fact that Revlimid maintenance seems to be most effective in the first year to 2 years, and it makes just as much sense to give maintenance for a couple of years as opposed to until progression. So, like I said in my earlier part, there were opposite points of views on maintenance treatment in general, and more studies need to be done.
Exactly.
That's interesting, because I had always thought that maintenance was pretty much a given now, you know, and apparently it's not quite as given as we thought it was.
Not quite.
It seems like some of the doctors think it's a given, and some doctors think it's a given for a certain subset of patients. So, and different criteria help them make their judgment as to which subset of patients may benefit from maintenance therapy, but not like a general one-size-fits-all type subscription.
I think, as one doctor said, maintenance definitely works better for some than others. We're just not quite sure what that subset is.
Right.
My takeaways that I got were similar to yours, although I did notice, you know, one thing that was quite interesting, and it kind of combines two things that I noticed, one from this particular ASH and one from the ASCO that we just had recently. In the ASCO, there was a Dutch study, and they did some in vitro analysis. And in this, they tried all the combinations, and the combination that showed the best results, at least in vitro, was an IMID, a protease inhibitor, a steroid, and a new monoclonal antibody. And I was wondering also what I saw at ASH was that they had one study that showed daratumumab, which is the monoclonal antibody, in combination with Revlimid and dexamethasone, and it showed impressive results with a response rate of 73%, but this was in a small population of patients that had received a medium of 3 to 4 prior treatments. So a response rate of 73%, I don't think any other combination in a heavily pretreated refractory population has had quite that level of of activity. So I thought that was pretty amazing.
Gary, was that with daratumumab alone or with something else?
It was daratumumab, Revlimid, and dexamethasone.
Right. So you almost have to kind of clarify what it is, but you're right. Daratumumab, another antibody, monoclonal antibody called SAR-650984, have all had single-agent activity, which is really cool.
Yeah, what they said on that SAR, they call it short, the SAR-650984, that had the same, pretty much similar single agent. You know, and not too many things have single agent activity. And so the fact that it did, and daratumumab did as well, I think is significant. And the fact that just with Revlimid, without, Velcade in the mix, without a protease inhibitor in the mix, with a 73% in a heavily pretreated, and the fact that the Dutch study showed how effective, that four-drug combination was. It was significantly better than the current standard of care, at least in vitro to RVD, and then it shows how great it is just with an IMID and a steroid. You know, I was just surprised that I didn't see anything yet at ASH for, RVDD or RVDE for elotuzumab. Did I miss that, or was that someplace and I just didn't notice it? Have they got a trial, a phase 3 or a phase 2 trial, using an IMID, a protease inhibitor, steroid, and a monoclonal antibody?
Not to my knowledge, but it turns out I was on the same flight as the doctor who presented the SAR monoclonal antibody, and because of weather issues, we had long delays at the airport, and so he and I started chatting about it, and I asked, is it reasonable that there will be a trial of at least a 3-drug combination plus the steroid with an IMID, a proteasome inhibitor, and a monoclonal antibody? And he said, probably so. But to my knowledge,
you say that much better than I do.
Okay.
I say you say that much better than I do. I struggle with putting those all together.
So that may very well be something that happens, but you also don't know if they'll figure out. One of the interesting presentations I went to was another type of inhibitor called a KSP inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a drug called, I'm going to say, ARI-520, and I may be mispronouncing it. But ARI has been around for a couple of ASHes, and they looked at a phase 2 now, where they added it to Velcade, and they tested it on patients that were refractory to Velcade. And adding ARI-520 to Velcade resulted in about a 30% response, which is pretty impressive given that the patients no longer responded to Velcade alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another part of that was that they found some type of protein, the initials being AAG, that specifically would indicate whether this Arai 520 was going to be successful or not. So that the higher the level of this protein you had, the myeloma, that protein was there, the less effective this Arai 520 was going to be. So I thought it was really impressive that they were looking at things to try to determine if a treatment is going to be effective.
You know, there seems like there was so much a wealth of knowledge there that it was very difficult. You know, with even three people there and two looking from the outside, that you can really, you know, glean everything from it, but only the highlights. And I think that's what, you know,
the other highlight that I wrote down that I thought was something as a take-home point too. Was that in one of the presentations they were talking about the combination of Kyprolis, pomalidomide, and Dex in the relapsed refractory population, and most of these patients had probably three lines of therapy before that, and they're saying they're seeing a 70% response rate in that three-drug combination, carfilzomib, pomalidomide, and Dex, and that people who even had prior Revlimid and was refractory to that, they're still seeing a response. So I thought that was pretty encouraging.
That sounds very encouraging. The one thing that it wasn't part of myeloma, but only, well, it was part of it in that it could be used at it at some time in the future and was talked about it as such, but it was being, the headline that I saw, it says Novartis, I guess, in Penn's customized T-cell wows ASH with stellar leukemia data. And then it went on to say a total of 19 of 22 pediatric patients with lethal cases of acute lymphoblastic leukemia experienced complete remissions after being treated with this, they call it CAR therapy, C-A-R-T therapy, where CTL-019, a T-cell engineered to target cancer cells that expressed the CD19 protein. And they say this may have application for myeloma. But, that was a cure. This stuff was like, Pac-Man. It would eat 1,000 times. One cell would eat 1,000 times its weight in leukemia, in cancerous leukemia. It was pretty amazing. It's been all over the airways now.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Actually, that happened at one of the hospitals I'm treating at UPenn. And there's a little girl named Emma Whitehead who was one of the first children that got that target immune therapy. And there is a really nice video on YouTube calling like Fire with Fire that I would suggest anyone to watch. It talks a little bit about that therapy. And the exciting part with it applying to myeloma is they are now trying to find some of those, those immune cells that they make angry. That's what my doctor calls them. They make the cells angry. But with the myeloma, it's a different target. They can't use the same target as they use with the leukemia. So they're working on a different target. And when I went to my doc about 3 months ago, they were trying some myeloma trials where they were in conjunction with an autologous stem cell transplant. You would get the transplant, then you will be injected with these activator or angry T cells to see what happens. But I believe he was saying that in the new year that they were going to try this outside of the transplant setting. So I'm excited to talk to him. I have an appointment December 21st to see if there's any progress been made in that area of, you know, the same type of therapy in myeloma outside of a transplant.
It was that Dr. June?
Well, Dr. June was the doctor that worked on with the pediatric leukemias, but my doctor is not one of the leukemia doctors. He's a myeloma specialist, but he knows of Dr. June's work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it sounds very interesting if it could be applied, because they're talking about it being applied for another leukemia as well as myeloma.
I believe they tried it with an adult leukemia, too. CML, maybe? I'm not positive. And they had some success with that, too. But the overall success rate was with the pediatric leukemias. It's amazing. I would definitely suggest looking up that video, Fight Fire with Fire. It's sponsored by the LLS because they were a major, I guess, sponsor of Dr. June's work.
I just got, and you probably have it in your email as well, it just happened today, at 11:44 I got it in my email. It was from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and they had they got a new thing out. It says, remarkable progress toward blood cancer cures is happening today. And so if you go to their website, I'm sure that's on there someplace. And
Absolutely.
They talk about this this particular one and saying that it's for, let's see, what was it, these findings? Okay, these findings show real promise for critically ill patients who have run out of options. So it's really interesting. Okay. Do we have some callers who would like to ask some questions, Priya?
Listeners, if you have a question for our panel, please press 1 on your keypads and I should bring you live on air to ask a question. Gary, maybe we could answer some of the submitted questions. I think we have a few of them. Maybe Jack and Cindy can take turns in answering each of them.
Sure.
The first one is, first one is, would ASH 2013 be best described as stay the course or look at the game changers?
I couldn't quite understand that. You cut out. Would ASH 2013 be what?
Described as a stay as a course or to be looked at as a game changer.
What was the first word besides game changer? What was my
stay
other choice?
Stay the course. You know, it's
stay
the course.
I think it would be stay the course. But the course is really evolving. It's evolving to, we have a lot of IMiDs and proteasome inhibitors, but we know that there needs to be other areas of attack, and the monoclonal proteins is one. HDAC inhibitors hasn't quite had the success that we're hoping for, but it's another area that they keep working on. KSP inhibitor I mentioned earlier. So it keeps evolving to develop either new regimens with treatments that already exist or new regimens with new drugs in clinical trials. It's really the clinical trials, though, which are really going to prove and show how something can become a game changer, if you will.
And I look at it as probably someplace between those two, in that if the monoclonal antibodies really are as effective in combination with the IMiDs and the protease inhibitors, that that could be the element that finally, at least for newly diagnosed patients, may in fact be close to a cure.
Time will tell, right?
Time will tell, and that's exactly it. What we've done up until this point is, we've been playing with the IMiDs and the protease inhibitors, and now we finally have one or two new things, brand new bullets for our gun. Cindy, you were going to say?
Yeah, I was like, I'm getting an echo back, so I'm hearing my voice. It's a little annoying. I was looking at more as a game changer. I don't know. I guess I haven't been to many of the ASH conferences before, and I just lost my train of thought because there's an echo on my phone. But I just see the doctors being really excited about some of the new therapies that are coming up.
Hearing the word cure a lot.
That's a game changer.
And I think that's a game changer. I think another game changer that I heard this time is that doctors are thinking of quality of life issues. That was something new. I didn't hear them talking actually out loud about them, like what Jack was saying, fit, unfit, frail patients. I'm thinking this MRD that they're talking about, they're really getting excited about it because in other cancers like the lymphomas, it's really helped them find a cure for those diseases. And I'm thinking that they're now knowing more about how to measure that MRD in myeloma. So I guess I'm taking it as a positive and saying it was a game changer.
The next question for the panelists, were the monoclonal antibodies generating the most buzz, or were there other pipeline drugs that surprised the attendees? Jack.
I'll let you two guys talk about it.
My opinion, if you talk about new pipeline drugs, the monoclonal antibodies were generating the most buzz. Probably around for a while now, with the first one being elotuzumab that's in trials, in phase two trials, although I didn't see much about elotuzumab at this particular ASH. But sometimes you have to understand it's a matter of timing. These trials take a while, and it's good that we have ASH and ASCO, and they're kind of offset every 6 months because you want to present results of a trial when that trial is done. So sometimes it isn't done at ASH, it's done at ASCO and vice versa. But elotuzumab, SAR, daratumumab are all monoclonal antibodies that continue to make progress.
I agree with Jack. I think the monoclonal antibodies are the newest drugs in the pipeline, and they're seeing some remarkable results with them as single agents, so I think that's what the buzz would be about.
The next question is says that Dr. Palumbo says the discussion on whether to do maintenance therapy should be over as the data is clear regarding its PFS advantage. Dr. McKeel apparently disagrees. What was your take on attendee opinions? Jack?
Say that last sentence again. What would that take what?
What is your opinion, attendee opinions?
My opinion? My opinion was expressed best by Dr. Richardson, who said more studies need to be done in maintenance. It's not a clear overall survival benefit yet. Maybe there will be. But it's not a clear, you know, absolutely 100% irrefutable clear that there's an overall survival benefit, and that's what any patient would want to see. If I'm going to go on maintenance, and by the way, Dr. Palumbo specifically said, we should not use the word maintenance. We should use continued therapy, because that's what it really is. If we should continue our therapy, then you want to do it because you believe that there's an overall survival benefit, and that's kind of still the open question, in my opinion.
And I kind of agree with Jack that we still don't know the overall survival benefit of maintenance. Some of the studies, I guess, suggest there may be a survival benefit, but other studies don't show that benefit. So until that is seen, that's a discussion that you have to have with you and your doctor, looking at your particular disease and seeing if you think it will benefit you.
The next question asks about Black Swan Research Initiative. What are the new latest or new light shed on the Black Swan Research Initiative?
So the Black Swan Initiative, research initiative, really is to develop a testing pattern for minimum residual disease, the goal being that if you are tested for MRD and it's shown to be negative, perhaps that suggests you're cured. So it's still early in the development of this MRD. For one thing, there's not a clear definition of what MRD is. But I saw it in probably 8 or 10 abstracts said they used MRD testing. Some use something called flow cytometry, I think it is.
Flow cytometry.
And others might use a different testing technique, but that's part of the work that's being done now and to develop that clear definition. And partly it will be defined better when it gets applied. They'll come up with a definition, and they'll apply it to people who have been in a remission for 10 or more years and see if those kinds of the definition holds up. So there's a lot of work going on, and there's a lot of work still to be done, but it's a really exciting area to come up with a better definition than just something called complete response or very good partial response, things like that.
Yeah, once again, I'm not a scientist, so I'm trying to put it in the way I, as a patient, is understanding the Black Swan Research Initiative. And I believe what Jack is saying, with that minimal residual disease, they first have to get an instrument to test it to its accuracy. And then I think Dr. Dory was saying they're going to go back and look at patients that have been in a complete remission for 10, 15 years without any treatment, and seeing at what level of minimal residual disease they are, and maybe from what they could see that, then they could start testing new treatments to see if patients could get to that level of minimal residual disease. And I may be completely wrong, but that was my understanding.
No, you're right. And the interesting thing, Cindy, is Dr. Dury also said that this specific MRD test, they're hoping that it's a test that will cost, you know, the patient $50 to $100 beyond all the other testing you do. So that's the real goal, is to make something both standardized and affordable for the patient.
Great. Yeah, I just got done listening to some of the overviews by some of the myeloma docs, and Dr. Kumar from the Mayo Clinic was pretty excited about the Spanish study of the flow cytometry testing MRD. And he was almost convinced that within 1 to 2 years, that will be part of our basic testing, that it will be given to everybody in the clinic.
The next question is asks whether there were any discussions or presentations on the recent identification and practical implications of myeloma stem cells.
I did not see any, but that could be because I didn't necessarily have time or be able to understand presentations at the very low biological level. So perhaps there were some, but I didn't see any.
And if Jack didn't see any or understand, then of course I didn't see any or understand any about myeloma stem cells. I tried to go to one of the lectures that was considered Genomics 101, and I thought that I would be able to understand what was going on. And when they start talking about the biology of different diseases, it was completely over my head. So I don't know much about stem cells.
The last question is, did you leave the conference with enhanced hope, or was it all nothing much to write home about, Jack? Was it very hopeful?
Oh, I always definitely leave with confidence and high hopes. Like I said, I've been going to this now for many years, and I'm absolutely enthusiastic about the you know, so I can look over that period to see how much has been done, and I know that much will be done in the next 8 years. So I am absolutely confident of the progress that myeloma treatment is taking.
Yeah, and I'm very, very hopeful, too. I left feeling hopeful. When I was hearing the results to all the abstracts and trials, that made me hopeful. And then when I started listening to some of the webcasts that the IMS has posted on their site, and when I hear doctors using words like remarkable, fantastic, cure, it just it increased my hope, if you can increase hope.
Terry, what do you think?
To me, you know, I'm very hopeful. I think if you look at all of us who are either in remission or at some point in time may relapse, every time there's something new that comes up that promises to overcome resistance to Velcade or Revlimid or anything like that, like Pomalyst and Kyprolis, that's very encouraging. And then to think that we've got all these brand new monoclonal antibodies that could conceivably have a great impact as well. You know, you can only look at it with a very positive attitude. And for people like Jack, who have been through a number of different types of, care, that he can look at, his gun may have had one bullet in it, and over the last 3 or 4 years, he's got a full handgun. He may have a 15-shot clip. So I'm very, very, very excited about this current ASH and where the doctors, researchers, clinicians are taking us, and all that people do, all that people like Pat and Cindy and you, Priya, and Jack. You do by being involved in the IMF and also having leadership positions in your own local, international myeloma support groups. That it's great. It's really wonderful.
Jack, I would encourage
other people to do is there are going to be follow up webcasts from the IMF, and there's many, many materials already posted on the IMS website and the MMRF website that you could start reading for yourself and trying to make sense of it. We could just say so much, but you could see things that you're interested in, and I'm sure there will be something written or a little webcast about it.
Jack, if there is one research result or one drug that stands out in your mind post-ASH, what is it?
Did you ask, is there one thing that stands out in mind?
Yes.
Post-ASH, I think so. I think with so many more options out there, I guess two things. There's such a benefit if you can get a myeloma expert doctor on your side. You don't have to always see him, but if you can be in correspondence with him to advise your local community doctor, that's really important, because with so many options come so many choices, and that's important. And if you have the option to be part of a clinical trial where these treatments and these new drugs can be advanced, and you have to understand that you're watched very carefully in trials, I think you get the best treatment and the best diagnostic tests of anyone, and can help move the treatment of myeloma forward by participating in those trials. I think that's so important. So I would leave folks with that.
Cindy, what do you think? What is the one thing that stays back in your mind post ash?
I think, let's see, what stands in my mind? I have to think about this for a minute. I guess I am just very, very happy when for all the people who have participated in this clinical trials in the past. When I was sitting in the airport, I had a little bit of delay, and I was thinking of things I was grateful for, and one of the things I was grateful for is that we had all these results for trials, because there wouldn't have been an ASH this year if people did not participate in them. So I agree with Jack about the participation in trials, but I also think you really do need to start educating yourself so you have questions to ask your doctor. And a myeloma specialist is definitely someone you do need to consult with. It's just, I guess it's so important. As I was on my way to my local oncologist today to get my treatment, I was thinking, I wonder if he knows some of the late-breaking news that happened at ASH. And probably for myeloma, he doesn't. I probably knew more of the late-breaking news than he did. And I'm sure he'll catch up on it. And when he needs it, he'll talk to somebody, not putting him down at all. But I'm thinking those specialists and those people that were there are the people that I would want to make suggestions as to where my treatment should go, especially if I'm relapsed or refractory. Maybe the newly diagnosed, they might be able to come up with something, but when your disease becomes resistant, where do you go next?
Thank you, Cindy. Gary, Jack, and Cindy, thank you so very much. I think this was really a wonderful discussion. We actually got to experience ASH through you. Thank you so much. Sorry, Pat was unable to join us today. Hope he's doing well. I thank all our listeners, and please join us on Monday to discuss total therapy in myeloma with Dr. Van Rie from UAMS Little Rock. The link for today's broadcast will be shared with everyone via email. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Priya. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.